So the ancestors. Last week, at least I think this, just in time for All Saints Day, an article in the scientific journal Nature was published. Researchers believe that they have traced our species' ancestral home to a prehistoric wetland south of the great Zambezi River, covering parts of modern-day Botswana, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. So I got curious, and as I looked at pictures of this beautiful wetland, even though I know it's changed over hundreds of thousands of years, it didn't take long for me to feel connected. It was gorgeous, green, verdant landscape, snaking in and out of it these bright blue marsh waters, far as the eye can see. It is the quintessential landscape that you know, it just makes us sigh deeply and sink ourselves into the moment and say, of course that's home. 200,000 years ago, our first ancestors lived in a wetland in southern Africa, surrounded by marsh, surrounded by life-giving water and blossoming land and an endless sky. And for 200,000 years since, we, God love us, have roamed this earth. Billions and billions of us. Clouds of witnesses passing down one story after another about what it means to be human. I don't know if that feels comforting or overwhelming to you, or a particular emotion I like to call comfort-whelming. It's hard enough to live this life, like here and now, today, to make sense of the present moment, much less to layer over that all that the past holds within it too. For some of us, today may conjure comfort, nostalgia, joy as we remember our ancestors. For others of us, the wounds run deep when we think about family members from the past. And for others of us still, the story that shapes American history has kept us from even knowing the particulars about who our ancestors are. So a day where we remember our ancestors, whether we mean from two generations or 100 generations ago, it can conjure up some feelings. And in today's scripture lesson, Jesus does not speak that glowingly of our ancestors, or ancestors, period, I should say. He says, blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you and revile you, i.e., I think, like, persecute you, treat you violently, because that's what their ancestors did to the prophets. In other words, I think, be mindful when history is repeating itself. So today, we need to hear from these ancestors, the ones who were excluded, and the ones who did the excluding too. Which means we must be open to the multidimensional experience of being human. I'm going to try that one more time. The multidimensional experience. How'd you like that? Was that good? Did that get at it? The multidimensional experience of being human. It's not flat. Of not only living as though life is lived in the present, when we know full well it fully includes the past. So for one day a year in the church calendar, we take time to acknowledge what is really true every day of the year. that our ancestors continue to live in us and through us for better, for worse, and for everything in between. What would it mean for us to meet our ancestors? To take intentional time listening to and reflecting upon the past to make better and deeper sense of the present. Perhaps we would discover family patterns that have long been codified in our systems and psyches. Perhaps we would find trailblazers and scoundrels, excluders and excluded, pharaohs and prophets, people who were different things at different times. Which makes me wonder even more about the scripture in Exodus in which God does not leave the guilty unpunished, but punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. Theologians have referred to this as the generational curse, claiming that God literally curses a family line for a certain number of generations. But the truth is, we don't need God to do that for us, do we? If your great-great-grandfather abused the women in his life, there's a decent chance your great-grandfather did too. Which means your grandmother, his daughter, witnessed that abuse, which means she struggled to value herself, which means your mother developed a poor self-image, which means you are carrying the weight of generations on your shoulders and in your soul to the third and fourth generation. You with me? We're linked together to each other and to the past by these generational curses and blessings. And until we know what the curses are, we cannot break them, can we? This summer, we spent a little time relearning the story of Calvary's ancestors. I won't do the 40-minute version this morning. I promise. But one thing we discovered as we dug deeper and deeper into our story of origin is that this church's main original benefactor, Amos Kendall, was a slaveholder, which left many of you curious, concerned, and with a whole new set of questions. One of our singers and music coordinators, he's not here this morning, but Zan Sharif, actually got so curious that he wrote a research paper for a graduate class on this story, for us, in a way. And one of our members, who also happens to be an ethicist, hey, Chris Norris, is working on a book right now that will include a chapter on this story. And because of their work, I found myself doing a little of my own exploring in recent weeks. So would you take a little trip down history lane with me for a moment? This summer during our worship conversation, I shared with you that the only thing we knew was that one of the people Amos Kendall enslaved was named Daniel. We knew this because of a letter Kendall had written which named him. But in Zan's research paper, I learned that his full name was Daniel Washington. So naturally, as with all existential wondering, I Googled Amos Kendall, Daniel Washington, slave. And after scrolling through a page or two of the search engine, I came across the biography of Salmon P. Chase and remembered a reference to him in Zan's paper. Now, who is Samuel P. Chase, you ask? You ask? You ask? All right, great. He was a white abolitionist in Ohio. He spent a large portion of his career defending enslaved people who had escaped their enslavement and required legal aid. And one of those people was, you guessed it, Daniel Washington. In Chase's biography, there are two lines lit up in yellow highlighter from my Google search. It read, "In September 1841, R.G. Corwin submits the case of Daniel Washington, a slave of Amos Kendall, who was sent south to be sold to pay some of Kendall's debts, but," oh, I love that, "but came ashore from a steamer lying in Cincinnati." As a side note, I shared this with Sally and Elijah this week, and of course our savant-like historian, Elijah, said, "Oh yeah, Simon P. Chase. He was an attorney. Then he was on the Ohio Supreme Court, and then he became Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, appointed by Lincoln, I think, right before he was assassinated. I'm pretty sure that's right." And I'm like, "Who are you? And how do you know who Simon P. Chase is?" This is what a PhD in history gets you, but I digress. See, all of a sudden, I was linked to an ancestor. I was meeting an ancestor, perhaps one that I can't claim on my own, but who I was connected to now because of this place. Because of the multidimensional experience of being human, because of a strange, even deeply violent thread that links us together now. This is what happens when we get to start to know the ancestors. When we start to dig deeper and deeper and deeper through the rock and the soil and the sludge until we hit living water, when we begin to ask, who is Jesus talking about in this series of blessings and woes, of blessed are yous and woes to yous? What ancestors? Who was being excluded? Who was doing the excluding? How is that history repeating itself now? And the journey, the wandering through these liminal corridors may take us places we never imagined. We may meet long-known ancestors along the way that we can no longer celebrate or regard. And we may meet new ancestors along the way that are calling us to pay attention to something we've never known before. Here I was Googling these two names. All I got back was a couple lines, but all of a sudden there was just a whole new old world rising up around me. And I found myself lost inside Daniel's story and Salmon's story this past week, wondering about them every time my thoughts would trail. As Sally and I went this weekend to see the new film about the great emancipator, Harriet Tubman, as my imagination took in her story, I kept seeing parts of Daniel's story. What did it feel like when he found out he was being sold and sent south? What fear did he face when he decided he was going to escape? Wow! What did it feel like to hide in a steamboat in Cincinnati? Did he make it to freedom? What were his first words if he did? All of a sudden, I was connected to Daniel. All of a sudden, we were connected to Daniel, and we were connected to Salmon P. Chase, a white abolitionist, a deeply religious man who stood toe-to-toe with Amos Kendall, who let him have it, who would not relent or back down, who became known as the Attorney General for Fugitive Slaves. And today, especially today on All Saints Day, where the living and dead are closer than usual, I can't help but wonder, oh, what if Daniel feels me asking these questions? What if he feels like it's safe enough for him to walk through this door today? And if not quite yet today, What would it look like for him to feel safe enough the next All Saints or the next All Saints? On this day where the threshold between the living and the dead is thin, what if Daniel is standing in the narthex right there at the back door watching us, listening to us, hearing his name called, his story told, at least the two lines we have of it, and of all places, the church that his enslaver paid to have built. So where will these threads, this multidimensional experience take us together? Guess what? I don't know. This is the mystery a day like today calls us to. What will happen when we dig and dig and discover the ancestors, both the excluders and the excluded, the ones we didn't even know about, but who somehow find themselves bound up in our story too? What if Daniel Washington and Salmon P. Chase chose to be our saints, based on the welcome we gave them here, the work we were up to here, the imagination we were shaping here? What kind of choices would we make as a church for their stories to become our light and guide? Today's a good day to ask those questions. As we gather and have gathered at a table of remembrance, a table where Jesus, the night he was persecuted, excluded, and reviled, says to his friends, "When you eat this bread and when you drink this cup, remember me. Remember me." When the veil between the living and the dead is thin like today, remember me. When you remember your ancestors, remember me. When you face the terror of the generational curse, remember me. When you begin the journey that leads you to the generational blessing, remember me. And when the past calls out to you all the way to that sacred ancient wetland where it all began, remember me.